All right, hi everybody, and welcome to lecture 43 in this ancient history program of History at Our House for the elementary class. By the way, I called yesterday's lecture, lecture 43, which was a mistake, so today is the real lecture 43. Sparta part 2! Alright, so now in order to study Sparta, we are going to do our lightning review, and I'm going to pick people, even if they don't raise their hands. So here we go. Lightning review. To prepare for the very difficult task of identifying the government of Sparta, we need to have our government concepts all front and center. So, Sigourney, what is a monarchy?
One person rules.
Okay, one person rules. The rule of one. That's exactly the kind of answer I want. To the point, the essence. Okay, are you ready? So, Opal, what is an aristocracy?
An aristocracy is a rule of a group of people who consider themselves the best.
Good. Nicely said. Okay. All right. So now I want you to just rehearse that so that it comes out quickly. Okay? Because you had the right thought, but I can see that you are still putting it together. And if you need to do that, it slows you down. So what you said was just right. Okay, so now let's all rehearse that together. Okay? Aristocracy is the rule of a group that considers itself the best. Okay, good. Okay, number three, Wyatt, a Tyrannos.
A Tyrannos is a government where you mean a tyranny?
Yes, okay. If you prefer, yes.
A tyranny in an ancient Greek terms, in modern terms, it would mean the rule of a very harsh king. But in Greek times, it meant the rule of a king which could be anyone, could even be part of an aristocracy that came to power because the people upheld him.
Okay, so that is all very good, and so nothing wrong with any of that, except that we gotta get it fast and automatic. So I'm gonna take Henry Wyatt's formulation, and I'm gonna zip it up into a quick answer. And Wyatt, the reason why I said Tyrannos was so that we wouldn't have to go through that distinction that you did. So I'm going to stick with Tyrannos rather than tyranny, because if you do tyranny, you are completely correct that what you have to do is you have to set up a context in order to explain the answer. So I don't want you to have to do that. I just want you to tell me what a Tyrannos is, right? So that we can really just, in a flash, get the right answer. So we're going to say, and everybody should rehearse this one, a Tyrannos is a king chosen by the people. Okay? It's a special kind of king. A ruler chosen by the people. Okay? That's the key. All right? Because that is not how monarchy normally works. Which is why the Greeks decided to have another term for it. They said, hey, this is an important difference. Kings aren't normally chosen that way. So we're going to have a term for that. Tyrannos. Okay. Quick one. Democracy, Rosetta.
So democracy is the rule of the people.
Rule of the people, okay? Which means the majority. Right? When we do democracy, we always want to say both things, right? The rule of the people, because that's the demos, and then we have to add that little qualifier at the end, which means the majority, right? Because how do the people rule? Well, they vote, and how do you decide who wins in a vote? The majority. Okay, good. All right. Hey. Just give me a second here, folks. Patrick was upset that I didn't choose him for any of those today. I chose you yesterday, my friend. Listen, there's a whole class of other students there. Every day somebody else gets chosen. Okay. All right. So I know it's always frustrating, right? I bet some of you out on the phone or on the computer also feel the same way, right? When you put up your hand and Mr. Powell doesn't choose you, I'm sure there's always an element of frustration, because putting up your hand is this act of courage, and it's this act of ambition and desire. You want to participate. It's always great. And every time I see a hand go up in this class, it's my favorite thing, right? You know that. I've said that. Questions and answers, those are my favorite thing in the class. But inevitably, I can only choose one person to answer one. Unless you really, really insist that you also want to answer a question. But here, I wanted to choose certain people, and I can't choose everybody. Okay, guys? So, if that has ever been a concern for you, I hope that you understand that it's not a matter of treating anybody unfairly or whatever in any particular moment. It's that I need to spread it around as a teacher. Okay, so let's get going with our story of fascinating story of Sparta here, because I have given you kind of a trail of breadcrumbs. I have said, hey, Sparta is a pretty interesting place. Sometimes it looks like a monarchy, and sometimes it looks like an aristocracy. That's why we needed those terms, right? So that you know what I'm talking about there. And in particular, yesterday we ended off with a discussion of the fact that one of the things that was relatively aristocratic about Sparta was that how did the people of Sparta own their slaves? Now, when I say people, I should really say, how did the Spartiati, right, the aristocracy, how did they own their slaves? This was a big question yesterday that we talked about. What would be, if we're going to answer it in one word, what would that one word be? Patrick, can you go back on that self-test from yesterday? Tell me what that word was.
Collectively.
Collectively. Okay. That's a strange word, collectively. What does it mean? What would be a synonym for collectively? To do something or especially in the weird case, own something collectively. Rosetta, what would be your synonym?
Collectively means that anyone, like everyone, sort of owns them.
Okay, having to do with everyone. That's not so much a synonym, but you're trying to describe what it means, which is fine. I'm trying to look for some synonyms here that can also help us. Opal?
Together.
Together, okay, or in common. Right? Okay, so the example that I gave yesterday of something that you could describe as being owned collectively was public roads. Because everybody can use them. But the strange thing about the concept of collective ownership is it actually is what we call, philosophers would call a contradiction in terms. In other words, one part of the idea contradicts the other part. They don't go together. There's no such thing, in fact. And so what we find out when we look at the case of public roads, for instance, yes, it's true that in general, everybody uses them. But the truth is, when you say that they're public, what you're really saying is nobody owns them. Because if you understand what ownership means, and that's why I had you think of your personal prized possession that is yours and nobody else's, that's ownership. It's exclusive. So if you have ownership of something, like your parents have ownership of their house, can just anybody walk in off the street and sit down and eat breakfast with you? Can anybody go and sleep in your bedroom tonight? That's property. That's ownership. It's exclusive. So to use the term collective ownership is a hilarious kind of contradiction. People fall for it, but anyway, it is a contradiction. And public roads kind of show us that. They're interesting because they work, right? They seem to, don't they? Except when there's so many potholes and people get upset. But, you know, they seem to work. But then the thing is, of course, what it ultimately means is the government controls them. That's the ultimate meaning of anything that is so-called collectively owned. the government control. Only the police can shut down the roads. Or maybe the National Guard or something like that, right? The army, right? Only the police can do. Only the government could do that. If you go onto a road and you try to shut it down, what's going to happen? You're going to get arrested, right? But you're going to say to the government, well, I own this road. It belongs to everybody. I'm part of everybody. And then the police will say, yeah, well, you're part of everybody, but you're not everybody. And that's the whole kind of funny idea of collective ownership. You got to be everybody in order to control it. And there is a little group in society that allows itself to pretend that it is everybody. And that's the government. And so it's such a funny idea. But anyway, this is one of those things that history can help us to discuss and think about. And it's a fascinating idea. So here in the case of Sparta, we have the example of the collective ownership of slaves, which means nobody owns them, which means the government controls slaves. And we said yesterday, well, that meant that they had no right to life. Because when you are owned by the government, you don't have a right to your own life. That's just like when you're owned by an individual if you are a slave, sadly, right? I mean, different kinds of slavery. But if you are owned by that and you can be disposed of, regardless of by whom, you don't have a right to your own life. So what kind of government is this? What kind of society is this that Sparta has where even the commoners don't have a right to their own life? Well, today I'm going to shock you because you're going to see that it went further than that. It wasn't just the slaves and the commoners that had no right to their own life in Sparta. You're going to be shocked by who had no right to their own life. So let's go, though, with the trail of breadcrumbs. I'm going to lay another breadcrumb in front of you today. Opal, put your hand down unless it's really important. So yesterday I left you with a teaser. I said, here's something else that's interesting about Sparta that makes it difficult to choose, write a good name for the type of government that Sparta had. I said, guess what? Sparta had two kings. Not one, but two. Okay, wait a minute. That's pretty weird. And I think that Sigourney actually remembered what the term that applies for such a concept. So, Sigourney, if I remember correctly,
decennial kingship.
Oh, well, no, now you got confused. Oh, I thought you had it yesterday, but now you got yourself a little mixed up. Decennial means every 10 years. Decennial means a king that rules over the course of 10 years. You want to try again, Sigourney?
Dorking.
Ah, see, you did remember. So I'm going to go ahead and chat that for you guys. A system of government in which you have two kings, if there really was such a thing, would be a duarchy. And in a sense, Sparta was a duarchy. Du means two, right? Maybe you could use the word diarchy or biarchy. There are different prefixes that mean having two of something. Right? Okay. But this is the one that means a form of government with two kings. All right. So here's a question for you guys. How would that work? How would it work to have two kings? What do you think? A king is a ruler, and what he says goes. Can you have two kings? Rosetta?
I don't think it will particularly work out very well because they're probably arguing a lot because you have to make decisions together and you might disagree.
Oh, so Rosetta's thinking that in a duarchy, the two kings would have to rule together. All right. So, and that would be hard because they would have to agree. Hey, does anybody know an example of a duarchy in modern times? Ha, you guys are going to like this. How about in your own house? Patrick, can you think of a duarchy?
Your parents!
Oh, what an awesome identification! There we go! The Powell family is a duarchy! And whatever else, you know, I mean, you know, usually families are duarchies, right? Which means that, you know, mom and dad are in charge. And kids love duarchies in different ways, because one of the tricks that kids know about duarchies is having two kings will let you sometimes get away with stuff that having only one king would not, right? Because you know that sometimes king number one is really harsh about something, really draconian, but king number two is a softy. So what do you do with the duarchy? You kind of sneak around king number one, and you go talk to king number two, and you get what you want. And then, if king number one finds out, you're okay, because the two kings are going to argue at that point, and you still are going to end up on top, right? So, hey, duarchies are pretty tricky. Yes, the duarchy of the Powell family is definitely tricky. And I imagine the duarchy of your family is also pretty tricky. So that's a pretty good example to think about, because, you know, you've got these two rulers and they got to agree. When they don't, well, the country doesn't work very well, right? The household in this case. So same idea. Yeah. Okay, so that's kind of a good way to think about it. What about, let's see if anybody can think of, now, going mostly with thinking of a kingdom, you might go ahead and think of a family as a similar case, but thinking more of a kingdom, what would be good about having two kings instead of one? What would be an advantage? You think of advantages of doing things that way. Or, if you prefer, we already have one, what would be a disadvantage, if you can think of another one? Right? Rosetta's disadvantage is they both got to agree. So, maybe somebody could think of a way in which that is an advantage. Can you guys flip that around? The fact that the kings have to agree would actually be an advantage? Could that be? Henry, Wyatt?
I actually have thought of a disadvantage.
Okay, another disadvantage. Go ahead.
Well, my disadvantage is, let's say, Sparta is under attack. It might take a while for both, let's say, one king is like, we should give up and just put our hands up and say, okay, we surrender, you win. But the other one was like, we shouldn't do that. We should fight back.
Oh, so a disadvantage.
Nothing might be done.
Yes, I get your point. So a duarchy might have a paralysis, right? Because in cases where you need quick decisions, having people arguing is not very useful. It'd be much better if one of the kings just said, And in fact, the Spartans had an answer for that. The Spartans always had one king of the two who was designated as the war king. So they actually had that one figured out, Wyatt. They always had it so that one of the kings was in charge of war. In fact, the way the Spartans thought of it was having two kings was an advantage in war. The opposite of what you were thinking. In two ways at least. Now you could try to imagine how this would work. So in one advantage they thought was that, okay, if the king, the war king, the one of the two that's known to have that role, okay, he goes off to war, well, guess what? You still have a king at home. So that means, there's a kind of expression. What's the expression about something is a way and then something will play? I forget. There's an expression about the mischief that happens when, you know, the leader is gone, right? So when the king is gone, there's still a king. So that's useful. And you could look at it another way. You could also say, well, if the king goes to war and dies, well, that's okay. You got a spare. Right? So it's like having a spare tire. You blow a tire, oh, okay, you pull over, you've put the other one on, and you keep going. So it's like having a spare king. And then, of course, later on, you got to find another one. So you, those were advantages, aren't they? They having two kings. Hmm. But nobody else mentioned here an important advantage of having a king. There's another really important advantage. In terms of the really good things that a government is supposed to do and stopping the bad things that a government might do, especially because kings have power. Can you think of it that way? Kings have power. And we know power corrupts. Okay? That is a very well-known fact. So what's good about having two kings? Julia.
Well, if one king has a really, really bad idea, then the other can be like, no, we're not going to do that. It's going to ruin everything.
Yeah, okay. Now, but bad in what sense? If we want to really, you know, make the best case here. Bad in what sense?
Oh, I don't know. Like a lot of different types.
Yeah, but there's one thing especially that a government does that's bad. What is it?
Takes too many taxes?
Well, that's only an example of this general idea of the government has power. It has physical force. It can use that against its people. So what's the general term for the a government that does that to its people?
I don't know.
Okay, you're on the spot there. It's a tricky one. I would use the word oppress. When a government oppresses its people. To oppress. There's a good vocabulary word. Okay, or rules them, or, you know, you could use a lot of different expressions, but basically controls them, or rules them unjustly, and there's a lot of different ways that could happen. Okay, and as you say, Julia, oppressive taxation would be an example of that. Right? So, then having two kings could be a good thing. Because you get there a separation. This is a crucial expression in politics, the theory of government. You get what's called a separation of powers. Instead of one person having all the power, you get what's called a separation of powers. And Americans have an expression for this. It's called checks and balances. So you might hear that expression in the theory of government. In American government especially, there's a phrase for the separation of powers. It's called having checks and balances. You are checking the power, which means you are checking up on it, right? Making sure that it's not being used the wrong way. And you are balancing it out. So that some people don't have all the power. Instead, you shift it around and you create a balance. So Americans call that checks and balances. Another expression is the separation of powers. So in Sparta, there was a separation of powers. There were two kings. And on top of that, in fact, there were five other officials whose job it was to make sure that the kings were not tyrants in the modern sense. There were five other officials whose job it was to make sure that the kings followed the laws of Sparta. And actually, Sparta did have laws. Very interesting. I'm going to go ahead and share my screen with you and show you the famous lawgiver of Sparta. His name was Lycurgus. And he's kind of a, see it says legendary here. So Lycurgus was the legendary lawgiver because back at this point in history, you see it says born 800, it should really say circa, died and it should say circa, because nobody knows. Sparta didn't have a very clear history, and so nobody really knows. But supposedly he's the one who gave Sparta its, well, we could say its laws. And what do we call that basic set of laws that a country has? That everybody must follow? Guess what? Including the king? What kind of law is that? Julia?
The
The Constitution?
Yes. So Lycurgus is the one credited for giving Sparta its constitution. It wasn't written down, apparently, but it was passed on by tradition, by education, and so on, to all of the Spartiatai knew the laws. So, and the kings had to follow the laws. So there were five characters called ephors, whose job it was, I'm going to put them down here in the chat, ephors, their job was to police the kings. Ooh. So, Sparta was an interesting place. It was a place where there wasn't just one king, there were two. Their powers were balanced. And not only that, there were laws, there was a constitution. And there were officials, five of them, ephors, that were enforcers of that constitution on the kings. Wow, so what kind of government is this, everybody? Isn't this peculiar? What would you call that? A system of government that has a basic set of laws where both the kings are not above the law. Who's got that one? All right, nobody's got it. So let me, Julia thinks she might have it. Let me give a couple more hints to everybody else. What do we call it? When the king is not above the law. One king, such as, for instance, King John of England. What do we call it? When in 1215, hello, anchor fact of American history. Rosetta?
The barbarians made him sign the Magna Carta.
The barbarians? No! They were the more civilized barons! Oh, but you meant barons, not barbarians. I'm sorry to poke fun. I know what you meant, Rosetta. That's fine. So the barons made the king sign the Magna Carta. Right? The rule of the Magna Carta was the king is not above the law. So what do we call that? What kind of monarchy is that? With a law above the king. Julia?
Maybe like some sort of democracy?
No, it's not a democracy. Most of the people could not vote. Where you have a law and you have a king. Sigourney?
Constitutional
what?
Monarchy.
Good. 1215, Magna Carta. Constitutional monarchy. Hey, so what would it be if you have a constitution and you have two kings? Yeah, wow, this is really funny that this one stumps you because... Patrick?
Constitutional duarchy.
Good! Constitutional duarchy! Alright, so, maybe that's what we should call Sparta. Actually, I don't think so. So, Mr. Powell is really dragging things along here. Here's a cool picture of Lycurgus, by the way, as a warrior, you know, kind of a thinking man's warrior, right, with his shield and spear and sword and paper. I don't know if he even had paper back then in Greece, but you know, there he is, kind of thinking about stuff. Doesn't look like a particularly happy guy. Right? But anyway, there's Lycurgus. The other thing I wanted to show you about Lycurgus is, look at this. Remember what I showed you before about Hammurabi? Oh, actually, I showed it to you about Solon, but it's also true of Hammurabi, and it's also true of Lycurgus, and it's also true of Cleisthenes. This is what's called a bas-relief, and look where it's located. Sculpture that is found in the U.S. House of Representatives, which means in Congress. And it's dedicated to Lycurgus. So what does that tell you? It tells you that the founding fathers were actually impressed with the Spartan government. There were things about it which they admired. So the Spartan government is a quite interesting one because in a sense it has some classical virtues. And the Founding Fathers admired certain things about the Spartans. And certainly when we come back after our break, we're going to have an opportunity to talk more about that. They had quite a fascinating government, and the Founding Fathers admired things like checks and balances. So they wanted to make a government that had things like that. But the difference is that between the Founders and the Spartans, which is now going to be our last thing for today here, is that the Founders believed in the right to life. So, and they put it, right? Thomas Jefferson put it right there in the Declaration of Independence. But the Spartans did not. Now, isn't that sad? So the Spartans, the ephors, for instance, had a few jobs in addition to controlling the kings. So that was part of it. And we could look at the ephors and we could say, well, hey, they have a good job. We admire that because the protection, we might say in modern terms, hey, the protection of rights against the kings is a good thing. But that's not what the ephors were for. The ephors were to protect the laws. Is that the same thing as protecting rights? That's kind of a college question, but maybe somebody could answer it. Now, you guys are pretty smart. So, Rosetta, what would you say? Is that the same thing?
No, I wouldn't say so, because laws are just laws, but rights are... They're more than, like,
that
you have a right to live.
I like how you said that. Rights are more. That's really deep. You're almost ready for college, Rosetta. Okay, so, yeah, the college answer would be, it depends. It depends. It depends on what kind of laws they are. Right? If the laws are good, if the laws are in defense of rights, then the ephors defending the laws will make them defend rights. But what happens if the laws aren't good? Aha! Then you get into the deep moral quandary that so many people get, which is, what do you do? Do you follow the law or do you do the right thing? You only end up in that quandary when the laws are wrong. And it's a difficult one. It's always a difficult one for anybody that has a job of enforcing the laws for any person in a society where the laws are wrong, what do? And so anyway, the ephors didn't think that way because they didn't believe in the right to life. In fact, the ephors had great powers according to the laws. The ephors had the power to take the life of a Spartiatai. The ephors had the power to arrest kings and take the life of a Spartiatai if they deemed that Spartan, a member of the aristocracy, to be a threat in any sort of way to the government. So, here's where I'm going to leave you with to challenge you even further with the quite ominous thought. Because as much as there are things to admire about Sparta, here is something that should send shivers down your spine. Even the Spartiatai did not have the right to life. Final thought about Sparta for 2015, as it turns out. Because tomorrow's History Through Art and Thursday is our review of your writing paragraphs on Athens. So, the puzzle of the Spartan government remains. And we'll only be able to solve that puzzle when we return, which As it turns out, we'll be in the new year! Oh my gosh, you're gonna have to wait an awful long time. I'm sure you're gonna burst with excitement. Yes, Patrick.
Wow, even the Spartan aristocracy did not have the right to life.
Exactly. Even the Spartan aristocrats, the ones you would think, they think of themselves as the best, even they didn't give themselves the right to life! Oh my. Opal.
What about, for some reason, I just forgot what they're called, but like, you know, the people who were enforcing the laws, did they have the right to life?
The Ephors?
Mm-hmm. Very good. The Ephors.
No, that's a very good question. So I really like that question. So obviously they had a job to do to enforce the laws against the Spartiatai. They themselves were Spartiatai. So they swore an oath to uphold the law. If they didn't do that, guess why there were five of them? And guess why there were two kings? Because if any of those guys breaks the deal, well, off with their heads too. So basically, Sparta was a bunch of guys pointing swords at each other. What kind of government is that? There you go. Good ending. What do you call a government which basically is everybody pointing a sword at everybody else? Okay, talk to you guys tomorrow. Bye for now.
Bye, Mr. Powell.
Bye.